A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Tone Ireland podcast. As always, I'm joined by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
And Rowan is on the decks. And this week, we've another Southsider that seems to be taking over with Garrod Morrissey and Brian Lenehan and Ty Hickey. But this one is Spike O'Sullivan, Gary O'Sullivan, boxer from Mahon. How are you keeping?
Great, James. By yourself?
Thanks a million for coming on the podcast. I'm great. So delighted to have you here. You know, I'm a fan and I follow you on Twitter.
So am I.
You've got a great relationship with your followers on Twitter, don't you? You've a lot of engagement.
Yeah. It kind of comes simple enough to me. Like, it comes easy and you know, sure, I'm from Mahon and working class fella, like, and Garrod Morrissey, actually, another fella, sound
nice old man, nice fella, like, yeah, salt to the up down to Mahon.
Big time, by geez, I know all his family, Garrod.
Yeah,
it actually says a lot that you interact with a lot of your followers like that. It says a lot about you as a person, you know. It says like that it doesn't matter where you are in life, that you're still yourself, you're still people's person, like you're not gone into your, you're not gone too far into your ego or anything like that. You're still Spike O'Sullivan, Gary O'Sullivan, like all your neighbours and everybody in Mahon knows you, you know.
Oh, definitely. Geez, you're like, not much has changed really for me and you personally. Like, I don't feel any different to ever did really, like, you know, since I was walking around the street as a teenager in Mahon. Like, I still feel the same. Actually, in fact, I'm still very, some of my very best friends are from Mahon, like, and obviously enough, and we actually went for a walk there recently around Mahon, you know, rolling back the years. It's great, like, you know, I really enjoyed it, like, it was brilliant. Yeah. We walked all our old haunts, you know, all around Mahon there only about 2 weeks ago, just for the kind of reminiscent. I met a few lads I used to be hanging around with from teenagers. We've a WhatsApp group there, old school Mahon is called, and we had great crack in it, like, and just put in a message and we all met up and the coffee and walked around with us. Great.
I had my uncle, he's from Knocknaheeny, but he's living in Dublin years, and he was down there last summer now at this stage, and actually when we were shooting a few photographs for the promotion of this initially when we just started it up, he was down, so we brought him in for a spin anyway, but he's in his 50s now, like, and we were up by down Nash's Boreen, down Fitzgerald's Park, the Shaky Bridge, Lee Fields, and just driving around the north side, and he had a story for every field we went into, you know, and he was with this one over here and he fought this for the down there. But you know, I love hearing the old stories and I love reminiscing you know, about the past. But can you tell me what it was like growing up in Mahon for you? And were you in boxing since you were a child?
Yeah, my father started. I seen the first pictures of myself with boxing gloves there. So about, must be only about 2 years of age, you know. But I kind of started training officially at about five, like, properly with my dad. And my dad used to sit down on the mattress, and I had a gum shield, and he had a pair of gloves, and I had.
Was he a boxer?
My dad was a boxer, so yeah. And he used to just, you know, get me into slipping the jab and countering him with body shots and whatnot. And I remember that to this day, like, and I joined, there was no boxing clubs in the Southside really at the time, so I joined the Glen. I predominantly boxed most of my life, like, in the north side of the city. So I was in the Glen, not the Glen that you'd be thinking of, now on the hill there. There was a soldier who used to run another boxing club in the Glen as well. It was called St. Brendan's, underneath, I presume, St. Brendan's Church, it was called, in the Glen there. So I started boxing there when I was about seven, and boxed there for a few years. And then I went to Belgoolie, actually, for a while, because it was what was the best club in Munster at the time, and most competition, the best baron, etc. And then the man that ran the club, Pat McCarthy, he got a big job offer in West Cork, and he left and closed the club. So then I joined Sunnyside with Kieran Joyce, and was there for years, 6-7 years.
Huge amount of history attached to that club.
There was, it's just the most successful boxing club in Cork, like, mm-hmm. of all time. Like, Kieran went to the Olympics twice, and Paul Buttermer, and his brother Gordon fought some great fighters, Roy Jones Jr., and he fought a few greats, like.
Yeah, and you know, when you were a young person coming up through the ranks, did you have a natural talent for it? Like, were you able to beat people your own size and your own age? Or is this something that you grew into?
I think I had a relative amount of talent. I do believe that there's numerous guys with more talent with me than me, even in Cork. A lot of Northsiders there, like, very good boxers, you know, over the years. And I think I probably, it's fair to say, I might have been the best. I beat the majority of them, like, nearly everybody, really. But I think that they had more talent than me. I had a bit of talent, obviously, but I think it was just but my dad's encouragement in particular, to train very hard. I trained very, very hard, and trained harder, and I was more dedicated than my peers, like, and I think that's what won the fights for me. And I really did train very hard, and I was, you know, I put it in, like, and just more enthusiastic and more determined, I think, about it. The lads might have better skills and stuff, but I nearly beat them all, like, really.
And it shows as well, like, it doesn't matter how talented you are, and we've spoken about this before, it doesn't matter how talented you are, but if you're coming from a home where maybe your parents aren't able to nurture that talent or bring you training, or if you're getting caught up in drugs or trouble in school, these can all impact your performance in the rings, you know what I mean? And it's having the talent, but having the family behind you and having that drive is the big part of it, you know. And so many people we know, Timmy, super talented sports people from the north side and the south side, that it just got wasted in the end because they went down the wrong path, you know?
Yeah.
Was there ever danger of you going down the wrong path, or was the boxing the one thing that kept you kind of, everybody talks about the discipline it gives you?
I think it does give you good discipline, all right? And I got pretty good discipline from home, and I was just very enthusiastic about sports in general myself. I just remember I didn't have too much interest in school, really. You know, I didn't do too badly at school, really. I packed it in after the juniors, right? I was very eager just to work and make a few quid, but I was more interested in the sports. I always just, my memory of school mostly, like, was kind of, I'd be looking out the window, like, wanting to go and play football or whatever, like, or hurling. I loved hurling as well. I just loved all sports. Like, it's just a complete sports enthusiast. So, you know, so I think I was more oriented towards sport than drugs or something like that. No, I like to drink, and I still do, you know. But I gave it up there for 13 months at one point, and it was probably the best that I ever felt in my life. But I do enjoy a drink, like, and, you know.
You're a cock, man. And an Irishman. We're known as probably the best drinkers in the world.
There's nothing wrong with a drink if it doesn't cause any problems. Yeah. You know, obviously, you go periods where you're so disciplined and you're in the best shape of your life, and then you have a fight and then you're allowed to leave some steam off. Nothing at all wrong with it. If I thought I could have one or two drinks and that would be the end of it, I'd be drinking, but I can't do that. You know, I try that and it always ends up in court for some reason.
But when did people start to notice you as a real talent in boxing? What age were you when you started winning titles and stuff like that?
Like, I was boxing for Ireland, I was national champion, like, and I was a teenager, like, you know. But there's national champions at every weight division, like, and at every age, so there's numerous champions, like, slower than us, like, so I don't think I was a complete standout fighter, like, really, like, I don't think I was the most talented guy in the world. I was pretty talented, but my hard work was more sort of what kind of got me places, like.
Anybody at national level that was, like, same age or same weight coming up with you that was, like, a direct competitor for you?
There was a few, like, you know, like, Andy Lee was one of them. No, but he wasn't a direct competitor in that he was the same weight division of me. We were the same age, and he was there, and there's another guy, Roy Sheehan, I remember, and a guy, Eric Donovan, who I mentioned to you earlier there, he's from Kildare. He's boxing professionally now, and he's doing very well, like, and
we seen him boxing out Eddie Horn's backyard, remember?
Yeah.
Dillian White got knocked out by Povetkin.
Was he there that?
Yeah, he fought on the undercard of that,
He's very good, like, and he's still at it, like, and he's had his trials and tribulations, like, but he's doing very well, and he's a good guy. And
we're an amazing country for producing boxing talent, aren't we?
Yeah, we're like a smaller version of Mexico, really. We have less of a population, so obviously we're going to have less fighters, but I think the Mexicans and the Irish, like, and
have you any theory why that is? I know, like, in like, we produce a lot of traveller boxers. Travelling, boxing is a big part of travelling culture. But, like, in wider Irish society, why is boxing so popular, do you think, here? We've loads of other sports as well, you know?
I think we've got a lot of, you know, I was actually looking at a video there, I think, from around 1982 or something, in the RT archives. It was on about the Mahon was actually a trial of what the houses were being built there, corporation houses.
Trial kind of communities, the Knocknaheeny
is now, and there's numerous ones around the country now. But I think that's what the kind of working class area is like, you know, a lot of people, like Mahon, like where I grew up, like my recollection of growing up, and there was a lot of street fighting going on, like, you know, a lot of it, like, and you're always kind of a bit of anxiety walking around, like, and where your next fight's going to be, but probably 5 minutes time, head, like,
you know, but you're walking around like you're on fight or flight mode constantly, the adrenaline is just ready to pump, like,
that's it, like, yeah, so I was like, I'm sure it was like that in other parts of the country as well, and my coach Pascal Collins only tweeted something there recently, and I thought he was spot on, but it was a couple of upsets all in one night on a boxing show, and you know, it was a Venezuelan man, a Mexican man, you know, they all caused upsets. And what he was kind of alluding to was just hard backgrounds, like growing up, tough times, like, you know, tough times make tough men, like, you know, and so I think that's why we have a lot of good fighters. Like, you predominantly, like the most of these good fighters come from, they're not coming from, no disrespect, like, but they're not come from Mount Tenatti, you know what I mean? They're from Mahon and Mayfield and, you know, Knocknaheeny and
Hall sites
or whatever, like, you know, that's the thing, like.
There's a great documentary, boxing documentary, is based in America, and it's exactly what you're talking about, but in the context of America, it would be black people. And why are black people the best boxers in America? Because when you don't have access, or maybe when you're living in a poor family or in a derelict neighborhood or a very poor area, boxing is probably the only thing that you can actually use to make yourself rich or for social mobility to move out of that area into a nicer house. And that's why in the documentary they were looking at what's that super middleweight? He was a champion in prisons, and then he was
Bernard Hopkins, he was locked up,
he was doing a sentence, he was in the gangs and stuff, and he started winning prison championships, and then when he got out, he's like a Hall of Famer now, you know what I mean? He gives great input, he says, like, fellas like me, he says, all we could do is box, you know what I mean? We're not going to college, you know what I mean? We don't have any money like that. So that's kind of, it's the same here in another kind of way, but it's always fellas from tough backgrounds, you know. And I remember on Joe Rogan, Mike Tyson's son was in training, and he was saying that he was to Mike Tyson, he wants to fight, and Joe says, you're going to let him fight? Mike says, no way. He says, I said to my son, he says, you've never wanted for nothing in your life. He says, you've grown up in a mansion with a pool out the back. He says, you're going to come into the ring against somebody like me, no parents, been in and out of prison all his life, and he's going to murder you.
It's a good point, though. It's really putting this into, like, that's the best example you could really give. You know, Tyson grew up in where? In Harlem or whatever. Over in fucking
New York City.
And, like, you're going up against some guy that's coming from a different area altogether and just took boxing up. Like Mike Tyson at the age of 18, 19 years of age was probably, like, I would have walked into a machine gun battling faster than walking into him. Like, man was just ferocious, and he had power behind him as well. Like,
it's the eyes, his eyes before the fight, no, his demeanour. People was afraid of him. He was fighting for his life. Whereas if a fella, he's coming from a middle class neighbourhood, that he's a nice home and everything's right, he likes boxing, and fair play to him, he might be good. Like, you don't have that fire or that desire, you know? And, like, you know, when you were growing up and you were when did it dawn on you that this was going to be how you were going to earn your bread and butter, and you weren't going to go for a regular job? This was going to be your life and your career.
Well, no, in fact, I actually done an apprenticeship. I'm a sheet metal worker by trade. Brilliant. Which is a good job. I qualified, done it for 8-9 years.
Not easy to walk away from a stable income, so, like.
I didn't exactly walk away from it. It's a bit of a complicated situation, but I job came to an end anyway, and you know, it was blessings, guys, but I ended up with feck all, like, in the end, then, like, fellas had more on the door had more money than me, and I had a chat with my coach Pascal, like, and I said, like, I got the bus up and down to Dublin there for good 8-9 years, like, and the trains, I used to come out, beat up and down by the train, get the bus, and a penny, nothing, like, and it was embarrassing, actually, you know, because I had a kid and a partner and all that, and I'd fuck all, like, but, you know, one of my favourite sayings is, like, what you're referring to here about these guys, you know, myself, hunger is a great sauce, you know, when you need to win these fights to get it. My kind of, where I broke into the big time was, when I was victorious in Quebec in Canada against Antoine Douglas, and, you know, I got the contract from Golden Boy Promotions with Bernard Hopkins, and, you know, that was where I made my breakthrough at a very late stage. I think it was about 33, around that, like, you know.
That was around 2017,
yeah, 4 years ago, so 32.
It was a great fight.
It was December, I was 33. Yeah, it was a great fight, great fight for me. Yeah,
he was a good fighter.
Very good fighter, yeah. Yeah. He was, yeah, like, he was tipped to beat me, but I was the bookie's underdog, and I trained again, like, I would roll back the years there, like, I trained like an absolute psychopath for that fight, like, I used to be thinking in my mind, like, I used to be up running up the hill, the freezing cold here on Cork, like, up by the airport there, up, I used to sprint up Matthew Hill, and it'd be raining, sometimes I'd be in the shorts, be fucking cold, and, but I used to be just thinking to myself, there's your man now over wherever he is, some nice part of America, which he was, training in some lovely place, hot weather, fucking probably out in his bloody lovely shorts and his top off with his 8-pack, and here I was fucking running up this hill here in freezing Cork, like, and I used to actually climb up a pole then as well. It was just a bit of a mad streak there, like, but I was thinking, there's no way he's going to be down this, like, just climb up the pole, I'd hang over the pole, you know, just a few knee raises from my stomach, like, and, you know, I was thinking to myself, I was doing all that, like, when I get in the ring, I was visualising it, like, when I get in the ring and look across at him, there's no way he was on this. And that's exactly what I thought. When I got into the ring that night, he's big, fucking strong, fit fucker, like, younger than me, bigger, I think he was about 12 years, I think he was 23, I was 35, like, and no one kind of gave me a chance, like, but I said, I knew I was going to win, like, and, I just looked across at him, like, and I was just, that's exactly what I thought to myself. Because I was, many nights, I was wrecked tired after training earlier in the day, like, I used to always specifically do it at night when I was tired, and I used to always just put my shorts and my t-shirt on the bed, like, and I'd be kind of wanting to get into the bed, but I'd put the shorts on and t-shirt, and I'd go over and I'd fly up the hill, like, and I used to be a killer, like, but I was saying, I'm going to make it work, it's going to pay off, and it did, like. And I had something in my mind as well. I had no vehicle right there. I said, I'm going to buy some nice car or this win, like. And then I knew if I beat him, I get a contract Golden Boy, and I'm going to, I used to be thinking about buying a house and all that then, like, you know.
What kind of pressure are you under? Or are you completely calm going into that fight? Like, there's a lot riding on that fight.
There's a lot riding on the fight. There's a lot of pressure that way, like. Yeah. But I'm very relaxed. I've learned to be relaxed because, actually, in the amateurs, I underachieved for my ability, I believe, like, and for how hard I trained. And what used to happen was I'd be too anxious about losing, you know. I'd be worrying about losing too much. And I get into the ring, I'd become tired immediately.
The energy's gone.
I could be so fit, like, I would bet my bottom dollar I could be fittest in the whole place. Yeah. I'm fitter than all the fighters, but my energy began, was too nervous just of losing, not of the fight. I was never afraid of the fight, I never was, like, ever, never in my life. But so I had to train myself to overcome that, and I had to have a meeting with myself, as I like to say. I said, if I can't get a handle on this nervousness, I just have to pack it in, like. Yeah. And I eventually just got to the other side of it. In fact, I was so relaxed in Vegas when I fought in Lemieux, got knocked out, and it was in 94 seconds or something, but I was too relaxed.
I thought that fight was going to go the other way. You could have done that to him easily, like.
Maybe not in the same fashion. I think he's a bigger puncher than me. I think he's the biggest puncher in the whole division. Plus, he was 18 or 19 pounds heavier.
Probably one of the biggest punchers in history, really.
I was told, actually, when I was in Quebec, he's from Canada. He was fighting Billy Joe Saunders that night. And I fought in their undercard against Douglas. Funnily enough, we were with some associate of Lemieux, I think he was his ex-manager or something, that he was our chauffeur, and he was gone from Lemieux, but he'd no reason to talk him up, but he was telling us, he was like, he's unbelievable, he hits harder than Golovkin or Lemieux or Canelo, and he could knock out Saunders, but Saunders is just unbelievably slick and just boxed the ears off him. Like, and I actually spoke to Billy Joe Saunders the night before the fight. As you know, we were always good friends, and we fought and we sparred many times and all. And he said to me, just look, I tested out his power. Billy Joe is so good. He's that good. He actually sampled his power just on his arms just to see how hard he actually hits. He said to me, he hits like fucking hard, man. He said, don't get caught. Ride it out. Be careful. First 4 or 5 rounds, he gasses out, and then you'll box the head off him, like, right? Mm-hmm. But he just caught me. Like, but I was so relaxed. I just thought I was 100% going to win that fight. And I went to sleep for not a second, but although just margins, like, I threw the jab, I hit him with it, and my right hand as I jabbed moved out a small bit, and it was actually protecting part of my face, like, but his hook just came in around the back, hit me on the cheekbone, and glanced onto my nose. The force was so great, it glanced off, the blow that actually concussed me was on my cheekbone, but there was so much force, it skidded onto my nose and broke my nose as well.
Is that the hardest punch you ever took?
Oh, definitely. Well, I would say so, although in saying that, as they say, is the one that you don't see coming is the one that knocks you out, like, and I didn't see it coming, and I was focused, I was at landing the jab, and I was concentrating on delivering my right, and I didn't see it coming. But I've always had a great chin. I've been caught, Eubank caught me with several great shots, and he's a hard puncher, and he hurt me a few times, but he didn't concuss me that I felt like I was going to knock over, but I always felt like I had a very good chin.
Yeah, I remember that Eubank fight, like, you took a few heavy shots, like, but you weren't going anywhere.
No, I got a good chin there. You know, and I had this discussion actually with my ex gym mate, Luke Keeler, and he got knocked out himself by a guy called Tom Doran, and I had a discussion with him after the fight. I said, Luke, fucking hell, like, you know, he was like, oh, Spike, the one thing I had above all else, speed, fitness, whatever, he said, was a good chin, but he got knocked out, and he said, he couldn't believe it, and I feel the same, you know, and that I've been knocked out, it was a humbling experience, and you know, it just goes through, like, seriously, Mike Tyson getting knocked out or whatever, like, anyone can be knocked out, like, you know, and
especially at that level.
Yeah,
you're fighting the best of the best, like, you've only ever been beaten by world champions.
Yeah.
How do you respond to a bad defeat like that? Like, what kind of mental state are you in afterwards? You know, like, it's devastating. Obviously, you have to work it so hard, and
yeah, it's a bit annoying, like, you know, because you've worked so hard and prepared for it, like, and you've been away from the family for weeks, preparing for it much, like, that's what pissed me off most, you know, have kind of failed, I feel like I failed, because I wasted my time almost being away, I could have just trained at home and lost anyway, that's kind of, that's my attitude when I'm in training camp, and why I want to win so much, because if I'm going to lose the fight, like, you know, I could have just stayed at home and done a few jogs and done a bit of punch bag out the back and just prepared like that and lost the fight anyway. But I go to Dublin and I spar hard and I prepare hard to the best of my ability, and I really want to win. I made that sacrifice away from my family, worked it, you know. So that's the part. But it's okay, when I got knocked out, like, Lemieux was grand. Like, I was happy enough after, like, in a way that I had got the money to buy my family a home, which was a dream for me. And after the Eubank fight, like, you know, I didn't feel so bad either, and I think he was far more motivated than me in that fight, because
there was a lot of tit for tat going on.
Well, there wasn't too much tit for tat. I was the instigator, like, in that particular fight.
Just to get him going, really.
I did, like, I antagonised him, and I was the one that acted the bollocks, like, and I chased him to get the fight. The reason being now was I knew it would be a big payday, and you know, to provide for my family, that was my primary goal, you know, so I antagonised him to get the fight, and I thought I could win the fight, but I was proved wrong, and I nearly knocked him out as well. Like,
the whole city stopped for that fight in Ireland. Like, everybody was cheering you on. Like, you were the proudest. Every
the movie came out around that time as well, didn't it?
No, the film only came out there in 2019.
Oh,
actually,
was it?
That was great. Actually, Terry McMahon.
The movie was brilliant. Yeah. The documentary, like, you know.
Yeah.
Is the hardest thing about being a professional boxer the time away from your kids and your wife?
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely, without doubt. Well, like, the training is very hard. There's not much easy about it, to be quite honest. No, it's a tough gig, but the rewards have been good for me.
Yeah.
You know, I got the house and got a car, and I got my mum a car, and I got Selena a car, like, you know. And so it's been great, like, really, but it's been hard work, like.
Yeah. And, know? Like, for every Spike O'Sullivan, there's 1,000 young fellas that won't get them rewards, you know.
Oh, jeez, I said there's 1 million. So that's the truth. Like, it's very low percentage, less than 1%, like, that get, you know, fortunate like I have, you know, and doesn't necessarily mean you're better than them at all, like, just to get the breaks and, you know.
Yeah.
There's one thing about it, though, right? If you're a young fella that has this complete determination and belief that you're going to be a world champion someday, you will become a world champion, like.
Yeah, I believe I'm 36 now and I still believe I will become world champion, you know? I truly believe that, and I think I will, and maybe this year actually, because we have plans in the pipeline there. I'm going to Belgium on the 20th of this month, less than 2 weeks' time, and they're going to do a bit of commentary actually. We'll be live on Facebook, and there's a couple of my gym mates there, Craig O'Brien, Niall O'Connor, Ray Milet, Niall Kennedy.
I've seen Ray Milet fighting, all right.
He's some balls, and like, he's a gutsy fucker. Like, you know, I tell you, geez, he fought in TG Carr. I commentated on that one as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I just laughed at your man, Sean Bourne. He's the Osquelia. Like, I'm not so great myself, very poor actually. But he said, one stage there, I think it was Ray anyway, or else it was one of them, one of the lads in our gym, they got caught with a good punch. Like, and I said, oh fuck, you know, can't tell you. And Sean Bond is like, oh Jesus, Spike's French is coming out. You know, Jesus,
that was class.
If we're at home and watching a fight or anything on the telly or whatever it may be, I'd be dancing around the front room.
I was like that now there recently. My friend Niall Kennedy there, he's from Exford, he was fighting a guy called Alan Babick the Savage, who was this big massive reputation of being the Savage, blah blah blah. He's a tough fucker, like, but I thought Niall had the ability to beat him, like, but it didn't go right on the night for Niall. He just kind of didn't perform, and Jesus Christ, I was watching the fight with my coach from the Mardig, like, you know, and he never watched a boxing match with me before, but like, I don't be usually as mad as this, like, but it was a great opportunity for Niall, and Niall Kennedy, like, I really like him, like, you know, I really want him to win.
Yeah.
I said my coach, like, Jesus. I nearly blew his telly out the window. So, I swear to God, now I was like, go on, for fucking Niall, like, you know.
And the reason I'm laughing is because I'm visualising it now in my head, because I'd be the exact same. My wife would be looking at me and say, where's this mad bastard? Yeah. Where's this mad fella going?
Especially when there's somebody.
What the fuck is going on there? Like, he's
especially when there's somebody Irish that's fighting. Oh. Fucking hell, I'd probably have more anxiety than you, you know? Yeah. And watching Conor McGregor and the same with Andy, any Irish boxer, you know? You feel very heavily invested in it.
You're completely attached emotionally. Like. Yeah. You're in the moment with. You are Conor McGregor, or whatever. What was your man's? Collins.
I see Collins.
Yeah. Like, we were always there with him. We were always with him in the ring. Yeah. Maybe not there physically, but we were there in spirit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that's one thing about the Irish people. We do follow our own with everything we have.
One thing I actually think of there as well, Ed. Do you ever read the book The Secret?
Yeah.
It's not about the universe, like, and they swear and they'll. People willing to win, like, you know.
Yeah.
The law of attraction,
I feel like that as well. I think there's a lot of love and support for me, and I genuinely feel that, and I believe it, and I think it's going to help me to achieve my goal, like, you know.
Definitely,
So, you know, I kind of, more so than for myself, really, what I kind of dream about, really, is my kids, like, I like my kids to be able to say, like, you know, I always thought that that's always something that really truly inspired me. It was like, I used to get the bus up and down Dublin for years and the trains and whatnot, and I used to meet loads of women on the train and be chatting to them or whatever, like, you know, and they'd all be saying, like, you know, I was kind of coming around to saying, well, my dad was shoemaker, my dad used to be a podcast fellow, whatever, you know what I mean? And right, like, for my kids, when they're on the train journey or on the bus, like, in years to come, say, well, my dad was champion of the world, like, you know, so. It's something nice I'd love from be able to say, like, you know.
That's unbelievable. Like.
Yeah.
And listen, looking at you, look so young.
I know, yeah.
For what?
Well, I'm 36. 36, I tell you, like, to be sponsorship, be very here, there's no sex savers.
This podcast is brought to you by Spec Savers.
Somebody asked me there during the week, I won't mention who it is in case they don't want me to. This is, what do you put on your face? And I says, I could put on a day and night cream from the body shop, you know? If we were home, my wife is next to me when when I was been asked the question on social media, and I just, like, I kind of felt like saying, oh, yeah, just, the two of us were sitting in the kitchen in stitches, you know what I mean? Just because somebody noticed the glow on my face because of the cream, you know? Which would be nice now for the body shop to give it, know, to start giving it for nothing, but...
You look healthy, like, for about 60 years of age, like.
Yeah. I feel probably better now, and I'm 40, than I possibly ever did in my life. Because, number one, I would have never known how I felt because I had no awareness about life. But, you know, being away from all these chemicals and alcohol and even my mental health... And I'm not as stressed as I would have been before, constantly in the fight or flight mode. I just feel nice and relaxed and calm, you know, and I still have to deal with my daily kind of bits and pieces, you know, some stuff comes up for me and I still have to deal with it. But you know what, in general, I really, really have a good life. And it's not because I have loads of money or anything like that, it's because I really... feel good in myself, you know, and I got a lot of gratitude for things. I'm at the moment, no, I'm just starting my own business. I was at one stage, and I wasn't. I was going to construction firm. Now I'm back doing it again, you know. And people have been very, very good to me of late, you know, and helping me out. You know, there's like James there from McCarthy Insurance. Like he helped me out with a construction insurance quote, and McCarthy Insurance looked after me. And just other people, like, have just phoned me up and saying to me, like, we've a job here, you might be interested in doing that, you know. And I want to start employing people like ourselves, like me and James are coming from...
It's the law of attraction, you know, what Mike was on about, like, because you're so well in yourself, you're attracting all the people want to help you out because they say, no, wait, Timmy's doing something good there for the community. Timmy's a good guy, we're going to help him out. Spike comes across really well. He's a family man. He engages with his fans, he's grounded. Yeah. I wish him the best of luck, you know. It's like people don't like fucking arrogant people.
That's what it's about. It's just about Spike is just about listening for years. We were fucking a nuisance to our community. We were causing trouble or causing criminality or getting stoned around the place. But no... we're trying to do what we can for anybody that needs it and asks for a bit of help in any way we can, you know.
Of course, yeah.
And you're both looking very well as well, like, you know, I must say that now, you know.
Me a small bit better.
That's for me,
I'm actually back lifting weights for the last few weeks. I'm trying to plan.
Yeah, you look strong. You still lose the belly.
It's actually so hard to lose the belly. It's fucking stubborn. No, if you're not, like, dedicated, I find it around my trunk.
You know, the key is, right, when you are like that, you're on the healthy living buzz and whatever, and you're saying, why isn't the belly? When you start thinking like that, just ignore it. Keep going. Shortly after that, the belly starts to shrink.
Do you know when I get near the goal, I abandon it.
Yeah. But the key is to keep going. You know, it's a pattern that you probably have in your life.
Make the slip doesn't have to be a catastrophic slip. It can be a day and then get back on the saddle.
Exactly.
What way is your diet?
Yeah, fairly good there. I'm actually with a crew called Gymtrician there in Dublin. They give me all my meals, like, but they have them for... last good few fights, you know, top notch food, like, very, very good, like, you know, so that helps a lot.
Do you know when you're doing a lot of training, are you consuming a lot of calories?
I kind of have to cut down, like, to be honest, because it's making weight, like.
Yeah, is that a hard aspect to your career?
It is.
You cook your own food now, Spike, don't you?
I do all the time. My mom was cooking, I was cooking there, and I got a lovely steak and onions and mushrooms, poppies. And,
that's the job.
You know, treating myself with no cheat meal, kind of, from the gymtrician one.
Ham. Yeah, I was off meat for about 3 years.
Why?
And I'm only recently on it for the last 4 weeks, I'd say, James. And my wife made a boiled dinner today. Cabbage and turnip. For anyone that's listening abroad, remember the old turnip and cabbage.
Lovely.
And the ham. It's really
hard to beat.
You can't. I missed all that.
Yeah, you would. Know?
But it's since I started eating meat again, I'm after losing the weight.
Yeah, interesting.
Because there's more protein. You see, I was
less carbs.
Less carbs.
I was eating all these vegetarian foods, vegetarian sausages, burgers, and different things like that. There was a lot of carbs in them, but I was eating them because I thought, sure, I'm not eating this now, I'll eat this. But there was no protein in them, just a load of carbs. But now I'm back and eating meat. But I'm not overdoing it either, you know. I'm still eating very, very healthy. And then doing a bit of exercise.
Hey, you look at it.
Yeah, so overall, healthy today.
Yeah. But just to bring it back to your boxing, can I ask you about your power? You've probably the hardest punch I've seen. You know, it's like, are you completely confident that, you know, going in against, I suppose if I had that right hand, I'd be very confident that no matter who I'm fighting, I can end the fight at any moment. Do you always...
I guess I can, I can do it, actually. In fact, I'm right-handed, but I've ended more fights in my left hand. I punch a boot very hard. Mm. A very hard punch, right, like, which is this, a very good thing. And my coach always said to me, like, you could be 11 rounds down. You could be outpointed for the 11 rounds, but you might knock him out in 12. Mm. With the kind of power you have, you always have a chance.
And is that a natural power you have?
I was born with it, but obviously I developed it, and I've been training hard all my life and eating fairly well. I suppose that enhances the power.
You improve it as well, don't you?
Yeah, improve technique as well, and practice over the years. And actually, I think the whole of 2020, I got a punch bag. It took a couple of months for it to arrive, actually, with the whole bloody COVID situation. Mm. But I had no punch bag for a while. But maybe that was a blessing in disguise too. I two bursts of eardrums actually in my last fight, so it took me a while to recover from that, and I enjoyed the break. Mm. You know, it was great. I tell you, 2020 was probably the best year of my life, even though I'd only done one fight. I loved it. I never got to spend so much time on my life with my kids. My missus now works 4 days a week in the chemist, but I was home every day with the kids. I loved it.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
You get to know him too, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, I'd be very close to him, you know, just the whole time we were baking and with lots of fun,
That sounds beautiful.
I know,
No, it's great. I've no kids, right? But I've two dogs. And
two man dogs.
If we went back to normal in the morning, my dogs wouldn't know what to do, because they're so used to us being at home, you know?
Yeah.
And for them to go back out the back 9 to 5, Jesus Christ. But, There's good aspects to being at home, and there's positive aspects to the lockdown. But then the negative, obviously, is the gyms, especially, you know, not having that outlet. But you do, because you're an elite athlete.
I'm an elite athlete, I can go to Dublin, train my boxing gym, Pascal's gym.
When you're training for a fight, do you stay in Dublin too?
I do, yeah.
Up in Pascal's Gaff?
No, I stay in a hotel.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
There's some hotels open for business.
There's loads of them open. I stayed in City West there for about 8-9 years. I'm friends with a lot of staff there, but they're actually closed down now, kind of, as such, because the government took them over for the COVID. So I'm staying out in the Carlton Hotel there now in Lanchester. It's great. They're very nice there as well, and they're leaving me open. They open the gym privately for me, the whole gym to myself.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah, the for the general public, it's not open or whatever, but... They gave me, they said that I could because of the fight,
That's the job.
That's great, because I need to train 2 or 3 times a day,
if you were a magic wand and you had three fights left, who would your three opponents be?
Jeez, whoever's world champion at light middleweight anyway. I'd like a rematch with Lemieux as well before I retire. I believe that I'd beat him, I believe that it's I'm not going to go so far as to say it was a fluke punch. It kind of was, but he's been throwing those great punches for years. And I mean, he threw it, he landed it. He kind of wasn't even looking, actually, if you see the shot. He was kind of looking this way, and I hit him. But I'd like to fight him again. I think I'd beat him. For example, McGregor's last fight, he fought that guy.
Dustin Poirier.
He beat him convincingly in the first fight pretty quickly. But he got beaten in the rematch, and I believe it would be the same between me and Lemieux. I was actually thinking about that whole scenario whilst Poirier was preparing for the McGregor fight. I was thinking, what's in his head now? How is he feeling about it, over what happened in the first fight? And I thought to myself, I'd be delighted to fight Lemieux again. I have no question, no qualms over it. I believe I'd beat him. I think I'd actually destroy him.
Yeah, I think you would too.
What's the possibility of a fight like that?
I'm going to concentrate first. I want to become world champion. So my weight division now is middleweight. Lemieux has gone up to super middleweight. He struggles to even make that. But I'd go up the weight, but to meet him again. Just lift a bit more weights and just be that weight. Rather than the time I fought him, the longest training camp in my career, about 13 weeks, and I was I was walking around on weight at middleweight, but I'm too small for middleweight anyway, really.
Yeah.
But I'd done a bit too much cardio and I was bang on middleweight, like, you know, I was walking around literally. When I weighed in, I actually getting into the ring that night, I was 161 pounds, which is only a pound over the weight division, like. Most, Lemieux was 179 pounds, 18 pounds heavier than me in the night, like.
You're at a disadvantage straight away when you're going up a weight, like.
Yeah, sure, Roy Jones is doing the commentary on the fight, he said, it's a cruiserweight against a middleweight, like. Mm. He was like three weight divisions above me, like, in the ring.
Yeah.
You know.
Who's the elite at your weight class at the moment?
One of the Charlo brothers, or twins there from New York. I think that I heard he's going to move up to middleweight soon, so I'm not sure, like.
Yeah, that's who you'd have your eye on. Would you have to have, do you need to pick up one or two wins in the meantime to put yourself back in contention?
I do, yeah, and I will.
Yeah.
When's have you anything lined up?
Yeah, end of April, I think I'm going to have a fight in Unk soon, you know. That's what we're kind of talking about at the moment. You know, I'm going to Belgium there for on the 20th of March, and I think I'm going to return there to the same place and fight myself. At the end of April, as far as I know, like, but it hasn't been announced yet, and I think that's where my coach is negotiating at the moment. Like.
They don't give you much time between announcing it and the fight actually happening.
Yeah, but I've been in training camp there the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm helping Craig O'Brien. I'm sparring with Craig. He's fighting on the 20th of March, so I'm sparring him for his preparation. And when he's finished his fight, providing all goes well for him, he's going to come back and help me.
Yeah, do you know what I was thinking about when you were talking there about, do you know, just being able to tell your kids, you know, that you're a world champion. Do you know Michael Bisping, he's from Manchester,
I do, yeah.
UFC middleweight.
I don't know him personally, but I know of him, like, yeah.
He comes across like a genuine fan, anyway. Yeah. I like him, he's tough out, he's working class, yeah. Like ourselves, a lot of, and he's only from Manchester. But he was on Joe Rogan, oh, again, this, like, Joe Rogan needs to be paying me at this stage. I keep on mentioning his podcast.
Yeah.
But someone one of the days, no, Joe Rogan was say Spike was on the tone on his podcast.
Why not?
But he was the world champion.
You never know, I'm sure.
Yeah, you never know. Like, you know, we put no limits on any of it.
No.
But Michael Bisping was on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he was a middleweight. And he'd had a couple of title fights and fought at the elite and kind of just come short a couple of times.
Yeah.
And he was in training, not training for a fight, but keeping in shape, you know, that and waiting, maybe something will happen. And the middleweight champion, there was a fight scheduled. The fighter pulled out because of an injury, got a phone call. It was a rematch against Luke Rockhold. And he went in and knocked him spark out and became middleweight champion and retired. He says, that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to be middleweight champion. I want the belt home to my kids. And that was it. Everything I'd worked for, I was realising that moment. But you never know what's around the corner.
Never know. No. I just, as I said, the book, The Secret, like, you know, and yeah, I believe that I will become world champion, like, and it could be like that, you know. I'll be ready and I get the call. And, you know, I was kind of tipping away as such, you know, and, you know, I just believe it's my destiny and I'll get there.
You read The Secret. Is there any other things you do to keep your mental state on point as well as your physical shape? Just stay away from alcohol for the most part, I suppose.
Yeah, when I'm in training camp, I would, like, I'd have to, like, you know, like, for a couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah.
I read another book I liked, actually, was The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. That was a good book, too. You know, about, you know, not going astray and just following your journey, like, keep going, like.
Yeah.
Do you seem like a very calm person anyway, in general? If you come across as a really calm energy as a human being.
For the most part, like, I am, like,
yeah.
So I think a lot more calm now than I was when I was younger, like, became calmer, like, you know, and I kind of come from enough now as well, like, which makes things easier, like,
yeah.
You know.
You seem content.
Very content.
Yeah, very settled in yourself, like.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
It's a great place to be.
It is, right? It's unreal,
know, being in front of thousands, 20,000 people in a boxing match, you know, and just looking around, does being in positions like that actually help you to become more confident and, you know, say, for instance, you don't get anxious anymore, or you don't say, oh, am I in the right spot here, or just should I be here? Do you have that full belief now that you deserve to be here?
I believe I'm good enough, yeah, to be in all these places. Like, yeah, definitely. I know that. I don't think I know. I know it, like, you know, that I belong there and I can do it and I can fight these guys for sure. And I enjoy it. Like, it's great to get there, like, you know, and I was fighting the Glen there in front of half a dozen people some nights, like, and to be fighting in these places, like, it's a dream come true, you know. It's amazing, and I just kind of take it in. I'd be very relaxed and calm and just enjoy it, like, yeah, you know.
Do you ever get overawed by an occasion?
Do you know what? Now, the only one that ever kind of got me a bit, no, like, do you know, I admit it, like, was the Eubank fight, because the reason being was a big fan of his dad, still am. Do you know, I like him, like, and I think his dad's a great character, like, I've always liked him. And I used to watch him growing up, all his fights, you know, and I went, it was the first professional fight I ever attended, actually, it was 1995, Parky Cueve. Steve Collins, Chris Eubank, like, I was actually going for Eubank, like, I thought the only Irishman they're going for him, but I was a big fan, I was only 11 years of age, like, and, you know, I'm very good friends with Steve now, and his brother's my trainer, and, you know, we left.
How the world works out.
We left, no, like, you know, but, like, when I fought Eubank, like, I remember I used to watch every fight sitting on the couch with my dad, like, and you know, the fucking crows was brilliant, like, Eubank, Eubank, you know, and then I was fighting his son. And it was in the O2 Arena in London. It was 20,000 people at the fight, like. And I was just, I remember at one point the fight, like, I think he might have been getting on top of the fight. And they were like, Eubank, the crowd. I was like, it brought me back to the fucking coach.
Yeah.
But my dad, I was like, this is fucking, my dream in here is this fucking happening. Like,
unreal.
Yeah, it was,
Jeez, we brought back into a moment like that, you know.
Honest to God,
because
no, like,
I believe it 100%. It's because of the chant, like, it brings you back.
It was the loudest chant I ever heard when I was fighting. Yeah. When I fought in Neptune, actually, there was a man, I think he was a caretaker or whatever, of the Neptune Stadium since it opened. And I was up actually playing bingo one night with my missus, my mother-in-law and my mother. And I was fucking sick to bingo. Like, I said, look, I'll go up to the chipper there by parochial hall and I get you a bag of chips, girls. Like, what do you want, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And up to the chipper anyway, and bumped into this fella. I didn't know who he was. He was Spike, yeah. I'm the caretaker or whatever. It's down below in Neptune since whatever year low up, and I can't remember the year, no, whatever he said, 85 or something like that. He goes, I tell you, he goes, I was there for every event, but I never heard noise like it by the night you came out to the ring, do you know?
Yeah.
Just low there, but nothing compared to the O2 in London, like, massive crowd, like.
That's some achievement.
What's it like walking out to thousands of fans?
That night, no. Like, and a couple of other nights, like, as well, but, like, I like to stand there and just look around, like, because, you know, stuff I watched on telly growing up, now as a young fella, like, my dad, like, we always watched boxing, like, throughout my life, and, jeez, it's great to be there, like, and actually, I was saying, jeez, this fella's home, no, watch me on the telly doing this, like, you know, and I was, it's great to, like, to do what I dreamt of.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky, like, I feel very fortunate, like, you know, but I worked hard for it, like, I did work hard for it, I was dedicated enough, but I had my times off as well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't box there for 5 years at one point, like, I was running Lochmahan boxing up with my mum and dad. Or running it, like, and I was kind of the coach with him, and my brother was not that, like, but I wasn't doing very much boxing a lot myself, you know. I was doing more drinking and playing soccer and all that, like, and just coaching people. I used to tip away into a bit of bag, and but not near enough, like, you know, for 5 years, like.
And why was that? Did you just fall out of love with it, or?
I had a kid at 19, and I was doing my apprenticeship, and I had another kid at 23.
Mm.
Like, and kind of,
I think you last ground, like, I think them 4 or 5 years, maybe you could have achieved the heights that you got maybe at a younger age, and
saw lifts and butts, really. Maybe not, like, you know. I might have been ready, and I might be physically as strong as I was when I was 23 when I did become a professional, and everything for a reason. I was just talking there, Timmy, with that earlier on there, when we were at the coffee outside, like. Do you know, no, I think whatever is kind of destined for you, it's destined for you, like, and
you can't have any regrets, like, you know what I mean? Being good to you.
That's it, like, no, yes, just.
I suppose when kids come on and spike two, you have, you're responsible for them, you have to provide for them, you know, and sometimes your dream has to be put at the standstill.
Yeah.
To give time to them and to be able to provide for them, and, you know, I can completely understand what you're saying there, but then the passion for it probably came back in again, and look at it now.
I always kind of had a passion for it, like, you know. Yeah. I was in the gym and I was as I say, I never completely out of boxing. Like, we opened up Rowan Box Club at 18. Like, when I was 18, like, my mother and father up at Lochmahan, and it was a very successful, like, club and all. And we'd, you know, 13 or 15 national champions in the 10 years we had the club. Again, from work class area down in Mahon, like, and we had some great fighters down there. But, you know, I just wasn't really competing myself so much, really. Like, yeah. I was more coaching and, you know, probably fucking having a few pints at the weekend and playing soccer and all that, like, you know. But, what all happened then, how I actually became professional was kind of a fluke, really, I suppose. I decided to box in the All-Irelands again, and I did. And then I was 20, about 22 at the time, 23 or something around that. And this guy called Billy Walsh from St. Coleman's, Shannon Gary direction. He was out in America boxing, and my coach, Pascal Collins, was his coach. And they decided to bring Billy back to Cork for a night. Fight, like, you know, and they were looking for an amateur in Cork, like, kind of a good amateur, the best amateur, whatever, that would attract the crowd, basically, and turn professional. And I wasn't really taking boxing too seriously anyway, like. So I got a call from Pascal, like, said, would you become a professional, would you have pro fight, like? I said, fuck, it'd be great, like, I love the, I thought at the time, like, oh, jeez, I remember thinking, like, I'll have a pro fight, no, it's great, like, you know, if everyone will know I was a pro boxer, like, that's what I was thinking, like, super kind of, like, when, so... I just thought I had the one fight, and that was it, like, and that's the way it kind of worked out. I had one fight, then he called me up about 2 months later. He said, come here, will you fight over in Boston? I said, Boston? Jesus Christ. Yeah, if he said he was fighting fucking Tyson Fury, and I said, yeah, grand, just to get the bus, because I'd never been in America, like, and none of my family were either. And I was like, fucking right, I will, let's go off to Boston anyway for a fight. So I won over there, and it was great, like, I think I knocked him out in one round, actually, and then, fuck, it was great, and came back then and just took the next fight, really quite in Dublin, right, grand, won that fight, no, and just kind of went down there fight by fight, like, there was no plan.
Yeah, just happened.
Really, like, just all happened, like, yeah.
That's brilliant, that's a brilliant story, like, I don't know, because...
We never had a contract either, no, myself and Pascal, like, just thought it was a handshake, like, he knows me, like, I'm kind of grand, like, I wouldn't be acting the bollocks, like, I just...
Yeah.
You know,
turn up and knock them out, that's it.
Okay. like, you know, some most fellas know we locked into a couple of year contract. We obviously just had a handshake, that was it. Like,
He seems like a nice fella, Pascal.
Pascal Salt to the earth, yeah.
There's a lot of bad blood in boxing at the moment.
There is.
A lot of bad negativity around, you know, contracts and stuff that we won't get into here, like, you know. So it's great to have that relationship, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably unique in the sport today.
Boxing, like, is corrupt sport, like, and there's a lot of corruption in boxing, like, you know, throughout the decades, like, and never. It's never any different, really, but, you know, Pascal's a sound old skin, like, you know, genuine fella, like.
Yeah, no, he comes across like that too.
Do you know of any raw talent that's coming up in the youths or young fellas that are coming on that should be mentioned because they're real potential?
Well, like, there's one guy now, kind of like an origin there, Niall O'Connor, like, he's 28, like, he's a slow burn, like, it's hard to get the fights with the current circumstances in Ireland, like, particularly, like, and there's no pro fights in Ireland for the last couple of years, and unfortunately for Niall, like, and I've been fortunate to be based in America, but Niall is getting a fight now in Belgium on the 20th. I think he's a, he reminds me of Canelo, he's a foxy fucker as well, like, big, and he's like an afro because he can't get the barbers, like, looks really good though, he's a unique style, like, and I think it's good, and, oh jeez, I just there's another ginger fucker over there.
What do you think he's wearing the hat?
You'd better off at a ballet club, I'd say. We have a sparrow, we sort out later on.
Oh god.
Straight
But no, I think Niall O'Connor's a good fighter, and another fella there up and coming in the gym as well, Reese Moran, his name is, he's from Waterford, tall super, he's 6'3", he's super middleweight. You know, he's got good height and being left-hander as well is more awkward to deal with, like, so he could do well. And we have a guy, lovely, very nice story, this fella, he's trying to get his paper sorted out, now that he's in Venezuela, Jesus is his name, one of the hardest workers in the gym, he trains hard, and I'm rooting for him too. I hope he gets his, you know, his paperwork sorted out so he can travel and stuff, like, he's, I guess, I don't know, he's an asylum seeker, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, he's a very nice fella, like, and I just, you know, I've got to know him now very well, like, and he's so rude, like, you know, some people look down upon asylum seekers and all that, like, or
No.
You know, that's different ridiculous. Races and all that. Like, yeah. I think everyone's the same. Like,
I mean, yeah, I'm pretty much like yourself in that sense, believing that everybody deserves an opportunity to be their best version of themselves and be able to work and provide a living for themselves and their family, no matter where they're from, or what country they're from.
And isn't great as well, boxing is probably one of the few sports that's universal, like, in every country in the world, with boxers, you know.
Our gym now in Dublin is brilliant, like, the Caligorier gym, you know, it's like a multinational gym. We have a couple of Romanian guys, they're fucking so know, like, you know, I've actually been learning a bit of Romanian, actually, because I've got two good friends in Cork, Romanian. I've actually got another friend, actually, in Kinsale, he's Romanian chef, and two other friends there in Cork that I hang around with all the time. They're people I see most frequently, actually.
Yeah.
And the boys, actually, and the gym, they're all sound like, and the Venezuelan fellas, and they're all very hard workers, like.
What's that Venezuelan guy, Jorge Linares?
He's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Jeez, there's been some unbelievable Venezuelan fighters. Yeah. I can't remember how Jesus sent the guy into the group there. He's one of the most ferocious fighters of all time. But he done something crazy in the end, by, I think. I don't know, he done something bad anyway, like, I think very bad, like.
Yeah.
But he was undefeated world champion. He's battered everyone. He was about 20, he was started to slaughter everyone. He was violent, unbelievably violent.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name, but I never heard of him until Jesus put him into the group. Yeah. Like,
probably took the violence outside the ring.
He did. I think he. Like, do you know what? No, I can't fully recall the story, but he done something very bad. I think he might have killed a few people or something. I'm not sure. I think it was a fucking. I think I remember looking back at the thing. And it was a bad thing anyway.
Yeah.
At the time, like, you know, it was a bit disappointing. Like,
yeah.
You know,
just goes to show too about people that really have tough lives. They have a lot of anger stored with them. When they get into a ring, they leave that anger out, and they become superior. Really, they become big names in that sport because of that violence.
Yeah, Mike Tyson's a bit like that. But I actually met Mike there a couple of years ago, and he's actually changed. Like, he's a great, nice guy to be around now. Like, very nice.
There's a documentary on Sky at the moment, Bruno and Tyson.
I
watched it, it's very good. It's more around, it's an English documentary, it's more around Frank Bruno. Frank Bruno seems like a gentleman.
Big time, but I met him as well, and I talked to him frequently, actually, and so I was meeting him privately.
But you know, like, do you know what he reminds me of?
He's lovely, man.
Do you know him, like, he was at elite level, but Mike Tyson was an obstacle he couldn't overcome. It made me, and it was to his detriment in the end. He couldn't let that go. It really impacted him even after he retired.
Yeah.
A similar thing with Ricky Hatton coming up against Mayweather and Pacquiao, just kind of not being able to, and really destroying him afterwards, you know. And like, I hope that if you don't become the world champion, but you could become the world champion, it's not like, it's a very real possibility that you could, but if you don't, that you're able to accept that too. You know?
I will accept it. I've no problem. I could probably walk away now, like, from boxing. Like,
it's important.
I've had a great career. I've had a great time for
the, like, to get out of it with your marbles intact, your mental health, your physical health, everything is intact. You have your house bought, your car. Not everybody does that, you know what I mean? And that's so important.
Right? I could never see it happen to you.
No, I could walk away now. To be honest, like, I'm good. I'm good, like, you know, and I'm grand, like.
I'm not finished either.
I believe I still do believe I will become world champion. But I'm happy. I'm content enough. I can walk away now, like, at this moment. Do you know, and I'm grand, like. I could work in. I don't even insult and say, I'll work in such places. I work anywhere. I can give a shit, like.
Yeah.
Do you know, it doesn't bother me.
It
like
comes with life as well and experience in life, that humility.
Yeah,
being humbled by anything, it doesn't matter. You'll be able to do whatever you need to do to provide for yourself and your family. You know, that's a man.
Yeah,
but I'd say it's easy. It's easy to get swept. It's easy to not keep your feet on the ground when you're fucking knocking out fellas all the time. And
that's very easy to me. It comes very easy to me. But I don't think I don't feel any greater for it or anything. Yeah. Like, I feel grand, like, it's grand, like.
Yeah.
You know?
Fair play.
Well, I hope the next time.
It's just I kind of enjoy doing it. I like getting the money to provide my family, and so that's great, like, it's good. But, you know, like,
I would have loved to have been a boxer, like.
Yeah, do you know what?
I would have fucking loved to have been inside in the ring just because I had that raw aggression, anger as well growing up, and I would have been fairly mild, violent as well.
Yeah.
But I would have loved to have been able to pick it up at a young age.
And channel the aggression.
And channel it and use it. And because I would have done a white collar thing there a while back. I got beat as well. I got beat by pints by a different guy. But I enjoyed it. And you know what? I would have loved to have been in some form of contact sport like that. Boxing was one, soccer was one, rugby was another one.
Great,
I would have loved to have been a UFC fighter because I always believed like that I had this kind of warrior kind of in a previous life. Or else it was just the survival that I had to do in this life, the warrior, the gladiator, just to get me through my own struggles as a young person and in my teens and then my adult life trying to get through addiction and different stuff that went down in my life, you know. But
I think you have the physical attributes for a combat person, don't you?
Sound like a man to me. Yeah. Very strong looking. My boxing was never fueled by aggression. Like, you know, like say Mike Tyson, one of these now. Like,
yeah.
I need to keep calm, you know, and conserve my energy. That's where I need to be. And just, I never boxed for hatred or violence. I boxed for love, to provide for my family. Like, I want to win to get money for them, to provide for them. That's all I have no intention to hurt my opponent. I just want to win the fight.
That's unreal.
That's it. And I wish my opponent the best, and I never want to hurt them badly. Like, you obviously have to hurt them a bit to win the fight, like, but, you know, not. I wish I wouldn't cut them if I could and just knock them, whatever, like, you know what I mean?
Just do what you had to do.
I'd always, obviously, you have to try and knock them out to win the fight, like, rather than win around, tap around than the points, like, you know.
No bad blood.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No.
I've one more question.
For Timmy there.
Go on.
So when you had your white collar fight, I've had this conversation with many people and lots of my friends. They like fantasize about being a boxer, and they said, "I would love to fight." And I said, "Like, you know, the white collar experience." So I said, the adrenaline was incredible. Free fight was it? Do you remember that?
It was just. Do you know, I was mad, I was trying to focus. I was going into the ring and there was a crowd there, and obviously, you know, we were doing it for charity and cause and whatever, but it's just, I had everything going in there, but no technical skills, you know. Like, I knew what I was able to do if I was fighting on the street, you know, to look after yourself, you know, but going in there, it's different. It's a different story.
Yeah.
And I had none of what I needed in that ring. You know, the technical
side. You had the muscles.
And I got gassed out as well because...
yeah.
And the guy I was fighting was... he was a boxer. He was from a club, but I was just laughing.
That's fucking ridiculous.
And I had to fight against him, but...
There's a lot of, like, if you see it, these YouTube fiends now fighting, you know. The recent one there...
Jake Paul, is it?
One fella had the fundamentals and the other fella didn't. And it doesn't matter, like, that's a very... Like, it's the fundamentals to boxing, and I'm not a boxer. But if once you have the fundamentals, like, you're way more of an advantage to the fella that does, you know what I mean?
Doesn't make... I can't believe they made you fight a boxer, that's ridiculous. But, do you know, I know, like, what I was more alluding to was, like, how you felt. Did you feel like you gassed up because of the anxiety, the pre-fight, were you nervous?
Nervous
of losing and...
That's a big. That was a big thing as well. You know, I wanted, like... I wanted to win, like everybody else that was there on the night. But you know what? I also took the loss. Like, for me to lose something like that, coming from where I've came from in my own life, that was a major step for me, you know, because of who I was before and, you know, and to be able to accept that and feel it and look at how I was feeling after it and the ego saying, I had this and that. I was able to say, okay, like, you don't have to win everything.
Good feeling.
You know, I enjoyed it. Everybody around me enjoyed it. You know, I really had a good night, you know.
Yeah, do you know what?
Until I had to, my wife got too drunk and I had to bring her home for her to bed.
You're plenty strong enough to bring her home. I always say to my daughter, like, you know, it's like anything in life, like, I was speaking to someone about this earlier, like, you just try your best, like, in anything you do, and that's all one can expect of you in any situation. Just try your best, like, and that's it, like.
And feel the fear, and just do it anyway.
That's it, just do it, like, and You know, sure, like, if you try your best, that's it, like.
That's two very, very good bits of advice. Feel the fear and do it anyway, and just try your best, and that's it.
What else can, yeah. What more can one expect of you, like? All you can ever do in anything is your best, and that's it. And, you know, if your best isn't good enough, it's not, and,
yeah.
You know. I suppose when you put too much on it yourself and give your, you know, like, nobody else is going to put the pressure on you. But it's the amount of pressure you put in yourself. We have to understand and learn, like, don't be killing yourself. Try your best, you know, and do what you can. And that took me a long, long time to figure out, you know, because I would have had that perfectionist nature as well, even in college and stuff like that. And nowadays it's just, right, do your best. And if you give it as much effort as you always has without the anxiety behind it, saying you have to do this and do, you know?
Yeah.
Just, you know,
that's a good point, yeah.
But one thing I want to ask you before you finish, who's your top three boxers of all time?
Jeez, that's a hard question. Yeah. Bloody hell.
I'll give you five, so top five.
Oh, jeez. Myself, obviously.
Except for yourself.
Not. Evander Holyfield, I really liked him. I actually got to meet him in New York when I was fighting there in Madison Square Garden. Actually, 6 years ago today. Actually, I was in New York.
Oh, okay.
Preparing for the fight. Yeah, funnily enough. I was a big fan of his, like.
Interesting.
I could picture now, like, getting a notification on my phone this day 6 years ago, and there you are with fucking Evander Holyfield. They're great memories.
Unbelievable. I don't have that system on my phone. I'm used to technology, really, to be honest. A few of my friends actually sent it on to me. They're like, picture there of you outside Madison Square Garden 6 years ago. I didn't even know it myself. But, yeah, he's unbelievable. Like, there's so many. Sugar Ray Leonard, like, was unreal. And my own man there, my promoter Delahaye, like, he was unbelievable as well, like, class, like, he was actually talked that I might be fighting him there, actually, in fact, you know.
Did I hear him mind about making a comeback?
He's making a comeback, yeah, he's in training, he's, like, you know, but I'm actually the second favourite in the bookmakers to fight him, like, and I think it could happen, you know.
Even amazing. Though you're signed with his...
Yeah, yeah.
Oscar Delahaye, it doesn't matter, he's making a comeback.
Yeah.
Really?
There's a lot of people don't like him. What's he like in...
I like him, yeah, he's nice, yeah.
He was one of the best... Technical,
but he was unbelievable. He was a six-way world champion.
He was unlucky against Mayweather, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah. Some people dispute that they thought he won the fight, like. Definitely. You know? So,
are you still signed with
I'm still signed with Golden Boy, yeah. I probably will be for the rest of my career. Like, I have a great working relationship with them, like, you know.
That's fantastic, Spike, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
It's great, like
that. And it'd be great. Imagine going into the ring to actually fight.
Yeah,
somebody like
legend,
but like we're legend, professionals, and we'd have a fight. Like, I'm sure we'd probably have a drink after the fight. Like, and there'd be no hard feelings.
Yeah.
Whoever wins, like, that's the truth. But there'd be none from my side anyway. Yeah. If he beat me, or you know, I'd be going to beat him. Like, I'd go to beat him, of course. Like, you know, every fight, I'd always go to win. But you know, that's, and I'm pretty sure he'd be the same.
Yeah.
You know, he's a nice guy.
What about, like, would you be interested in an MMA? Somebody from MMA coming over, or a YouTuber, does any of that, if the money was right, would you do it?
I'm not sure, so, to be honest. Like, you know, there was talk I was going to fight a bare knuckle fight kind of a thing. BKB in Vegas a good few years ago. I had fuck all money at the time, and I told him, like, I said, yeah, I'll have it. Like, Pascal actually rang me, he said, will you fight your man there in the bare knuckle? I said, I will, yeah. And I'd say I'd be quite good at it now, to be honest. Like, I'd hit very hard and very tough now, like, actually. Yeah. And, you know, I'm fairly hard now, like, I'd have to fight all right.
And you can bring your three skills as well into the box, you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that, but I, fuck it. I don't think so, no.
Nah, you don't need to know, anyway.
I don't need to, no, I don't. I probably, unless they said, look, here's fucking 3 million there.
Yeah,
I say okay, I'll have it there and jump down after one round.
What YouTuber will we get for Timmy?
500 euros every grand.
Timmy and Joe.
Oh god,
look, Spike, it's been a pleasure talking to you. The next time you're on the podcast, we'll have a belt with you.
I will, actually. I have a feeling I will. I can see it here now. Yeah,
I can see it.
WBC or IBF or WBA or whatever. You know, I wish you the best luck for the future.
Any of them will do, exactly.
You just want to be world champion. And when that happens, come back on the podcast.
Until then, best
of luck with everything, mate. Thanks a million.
Thanks, boy. Cheers, pal.
I'll cut that out. Thanks a million to me.
Thanks
Rowan. Friends. And thanks to everybody that watches. And we'll see you all again next week. Take care. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.